ahead and pick the speed up. Your number one now, runway 27, clear to land green dot. Welcome to Oshkosh, guys.
Hello and welcome to the Green Dot, EAA's podcast for anyone and everyone who loves aviation. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Hal Bryan, and I'm EAA's managing editor for print and digital content and publications. Joining me as my partner in crime on the other side of this medium-length table, it is...
I'm Chris Henry, the museum manager here at EAA. And today, you know, we always have amazing guests. We have a fun time when we're on here chatting. And today's a little bit different. We're having someone who I don't think we've had someone with this experience on the show before. So I'm really excited to talk with Bev Markle. Bev Markle was a flight attendant. And Bev, you were with TWA, correct?
That's correct. TWA in 1966-67.
Wow. So let's start sort of at the beginning of this and tell me, you know, what first led you to want to pursue that career? Because that, you know, that's a career that was out of the ordinary for anyone then.
Well, at the time, it really, it was not going to be a career because in the 60s, you could not be married as a flight attendant, or it was called a stewardess then. You could not be married. You could be married. You could not have children. So therefore, we were all very young, all in your 20s. So I can't say that it was a career, but at the time, I was drawn to it just because I had just met my husband, my future husband, and he had been just received orders to Vietnam. And I was living with my folks, and it was time for me to do something else. And I needed to do something while praying that my Jim would come home from Vietnam. This was in, you know, 1960. He got orders in 1965. We met in 1965. So anyway, I needed something to spend my time rather than work. I was working. So anyway, I applied to TWA and they accepted me. And how I chose TWA is because I was living and actually had moved to Las Vegas with my folks at the time. And there I was working and I used to go by this strip mall and it had a TWA ticket office where all the tickets, of course, were written, handwritten. And I just went, I thought, well, why don't I go in here and check? So I did. And the manager happened to be there and he took my application and he sent it off. And a few weeks later, I got a letter from TWA asking me to come back to Kansas City for an interview, which I did do. And I was accepted, and I started training in Kansas City. And so that's how that happened. That's how I got into that's how it happened.
That's amazing. And interesting coincidence that it was just, you know, those twists of fate that there just happened to be a TWA ticket office and that was the airline.
That's right.
At the top of your mind, you know, were you thinking about other airlines at the time or was it truly,
no,
there's TWA and this is where
no,
I'm going to go
to? It was just a fluke thing. I thought, well, I'm going to go in here and see. I mean, it happened to be there. It was in a strip mall and just happened to be there. And I just thought, well, you know, I'll go in here and just double check with them. You know, what did I have to lose? So anyway, So I did. So that's how it worked out. Now, had it been United or American, I mean, I would have done the same thing. It just happened to be TWA. So that's what happened.
Yeah, it's funny. It's nice you mentioned United because my mother was a stewardess. Not quite 10 years before you. She was working for United in 58 and 59.
Okay.
And she got married. And that was, I think the rules had changed slightly when you came along because the day she got married was the day she got fired, basically.
Yeah.
It was, you know, that was it. You had to be single.
That's right.
And all of that. And that's just, it's so hard to wrap our heads around now. But
of course. Yeah. And that's true. I mean, it was. I mean, you could be married, but you could not have children. So,
right.
I mean, that's why we were all in our 20s at that time, you know.
Exactly.
That wouldn't happen today, that's for sure.
No. We absolutely love the good old days, but we can certainly acknowledge that there's some things where we've made some progress and have improved things maybe just a little bit here and there.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, So Bev, can you tell me when you so you get accepted to TWA? Can you walk me through like what the training was like? What kind of things did you do through training?
Well, we trained, of course, in Kansas City, and it was a it was 6 weeks of training. We lived in an apartment complex, which was just all flight attendants, or they were stewardesses at the time, in training. It was two floors with a pool in the center, and it was kind of a horseshoe-shaped complex. There was a supervisor, a flight attendant supervisor, that lived there with her husband. So she was married, but she had to supervise all of us because we were all quite young. We were in our 20s. But that was training. We trained for 6 weeks, and it was 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And in the morning, we did our FAA training, which was CPR, and we had to learn the aircraft that TWA had in their fleet. We had to learn all the emergency procedures, actually where all the emergency apparatuses were located. We had to work all the doors. And we had to learn all the identifiers of all the airports. So that was in the morning session. The afternoon session was spent on our service, our cabin service, which was how you loaded your cart for your beverage service, and then how you load it for your meal service. And that was interesting. I mean, but you were busy. So we had to learn that. And then there was, we usually spent a little bit, maybe an hour, not a day, but a little bit of time on grooming. Now, some of the restrictions I will mention is you had to have a weight check every month. You could not be overweight or underweight. And if you were, you did not fly, and therefore you didn't get paid. And you had to have your fingernails polished. There were no chips. You could not have chips. The uniforms were the winter uniform for TWA was very stylish. It was very tailored and fitted. It was a jacket and three-quarter length sleeves, and then your hat, and you had a skirt and a blouse with the TWA logo on the blouse and on your hat. That was the winter uniform. Summer uniforms were, it was a different color. It was more of a lightweight color and a lightweight jacket, and had a skirt, and it was more of a light blue. And the hat was a pillbox hat, and it was in the era of Jackie Kennedy. So that was that. But you always had to wear, if you were in an airport or if you had on your uniform, you had to wear your gloves and high heels. The only time you didn't have on heels were if you were doing cabin service. You could have on lower heels. You could have on flats. But you always had to have on nylons. So there were a lot of restrictions. And a lot of times you would have a supervisor on board that you did not know was a supervisor. She could be from a different base, and she would be grading you. And you wouldn't know that until after the fact, that she would come up till after the flight was over, and she would introduce herself and tell you how you did. So you know, there were some restrictions, but at that time, you know, that was normal. I mean, that was, you had to have either short hair or your hair had to be up in a bun. I don't know if they have buns now, but it had to be up in a twist, I'll say. And you could take off your hat and your jacket in your cabin service after the seatbelt sign went off. And you would put on a smock for your serving, for your cabin service. And that would be your uniform for the day. So it was actually quite, I will say, that era was very glamorous. It was very glamorous to walk into a terminal. And if you were with your crew, we were all pretty sharp looking. And, you know, you had on your white gloves, and you had on your hat, you had on your high heels and your purse and your crew bag, and you all matched, and you were walking tall and high. So it was good. It was good. It was glamorous. That's all I can say.
You know, Bev, you mentioned And sorry, Chris and I are both here just picturing this, the glamour of that era. And it's a very romantic period. Absolutely. But you mentioned these weight checks and the grooming checks and the secret boss riding along on the flight to sort of grade you and things. You made a comment, you said, well, that was just sort of normal back then. Was that kind of the prevailing attitude, or was there anybody saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. It's
no,
because now that those things would seem pretty draconian. Like, I mean, I guess our bosses will listen to this podcast and they will certainly let us know if we make any mistakes, but still, just not knowing that somebody's there and kind of spying on you, that would be that seems like that'd be a challenge.
No, it really wasn't, because we were all pretty much groomed properly even before we even got on the aircraft. We had to go into scheduling to check in. I was based in San Francisco, so even though it doesn't make any difference where you're based, but I had to go into scheduling, and the schedulers, nobody would check you over, but the crew you were with, we all looked pretty good, quite frankly. I don't know what else to say. Somebody would say, gee, your fingernails aren't polished, but somebody there might be another flight attendant or stewardess that would have said that to me. I don't think so, because that was just the way it was. You had a job and that was part of your job. You had to not only do your job, but you had to look good too. So, sometimes you can play tennis, you might be a terrible tennis player, but by darn, you're going to look good playing, So that's kind of, that's kind of the way it was.
But we
were very conscious of all the emergency procedures, and that was a time when you could smoke on the airplanes, and you did have passengers. Oh, the passengers were wonderful back then. They still are, but they were back then. They were all dressed very nicely. The men were all in suits and the women were in dresses and high heels and some hats. And there were no carry-on bags. Everybody checked their bags. So your overhead bins were possibly maybe shopping bags and maybe a lady's hat, and then maybe the lady's makeup case. And nobody has those today, the makeup cases, or the women don't. But back in the 50s, when you graduated from high school, that's what you got for your graduation gift. You got luggage and you got this makeup case. Well, guess what? And then I guess maybe your folks thought you were going to leave home, I don't know. I didn't leave home until I started flying. So anyway, but they might put your makeup case in the overhead bin. But there weren't a lot of backpacks or everybody dressed nicely. It was a big deal to fly. And it was, like I said, it was a glamorous job. And we did a nice, the first class on TWA, and I'm sure it was that way on all the other airlines, but first class was really very special. You had tablecloths, you had china, you had wine glasses, you had sterling silver silverware, individual salt and pepper shakers that were somewhat crystal. I think they were glass, but they looked crystal. And everything was served individually. You had your appetite, you had your snacks, then you had your appetizer, then you had your salad, all served separately, and then you had your choice of your meal. Usually only two choices, if I can remember correctly, usually a steak and chicken or something else. And then you had your, and that was all served. It wasn't served on a cart. It was served directly from the galley, from the front galley. And it was, you had usually two flight attendants in first class, and that was called A flight attendant and B flight attendant. B flight attendant worked the galley, which she did all the cooking and all the cleaning up. A flight attendant was the one who did all the announcements, which believe it or not, I actually remember. I did it so many times. You want to hear my announcements that I made? I can remember it. It's been 56 years since I've flown, and
Of course we want to hear it. You want to hear what we said?
You know,
we're impatiently waiting.
Well, hopefully I won't mess it up, but I remember it. It says, the sound you will soon hear is a normal sound of our landing gear being lowered and locked into position. Shortly after we land, you will notice a marked increase in the sound level as the thrust of the engines is reversed to help reduce our forward speed. Please make sure your seat belts are fastened, your seat backs are in their upright position, and your tray tables are stowed. Thank you so much for flying TWA, and we hope to see you again soon. We will be landing shortly. There you go. How
that's awesome.
It's not often that we have an applause moment on this this show, but that's definitely one. And
maybe Scott will sneak one in the edit. That you remember that one. Anyway, Flight Attendant A, which I'm sure they still have now, is the one who does most of the announcements like that. And so I remember doing that. So anyway, flying first class was very special. And I haven't finished that yet because the dessert service was served on a cart, which was not your carts that they have today, but that was like a tea cart. And it was usually had an ice cream cake on it with some fruit and some cheese. So you could take your, and of course you had your china plates to serve it on. And then you had your liqueurs that you could serve. And it was a very elegant service. It was very nice. It was very fun to do that. I mean, that's all I can say. It was a fun time to do that for first class people. Coach was, well, I flew mostly the 707 and the 727 and the Convair 880. The 707 in the coach section was, depending on the configuration of that particular airplane, usually were 97 people or maybe 120. So service was a little bit rushed depending on where you were going, where you were flying to. If you were nonstop to New York, it was a piece of cake. It was nice. It was fun. It was easy. It was very leisurely. Passengers were happy. If you had a short flight, which I had a lot of because I was very junior at the time in San Francisco. And I had a lot of flights to San Francisco, from San Francisco to Albuquerque, which was not very long, about an hour and a half. And we had to do a beverage service and a meal service in an hour and a half for 97 or 120 people. And we only had two of us in the back, which was called B and C hostess. So that was a little, hard. But we did that to San Francisco to Albuquerque, and then from Albuquerque to Kansas City, from Kansas City to St. Louis, and then we'd lay over there. That trip, I could hold, which when I say hold, I mean I could actually bid that and hold it. So at least I would know what I was flying and what my days were. Now, in those days, this reminds me, there were no cell phones. So if you did not hold a flight, you were on reserve. Basically standby. You had to be by your phone at all times, 24 hours a day. If you had to leave, you had to call crew scheduling to tell them you were going to be gone for an hour or wherever you were going, to the grocery store or wherever, to do your laundry. And then you had to call them when you got back. And that was that. So that was probably the most difficult. It wasn't difficult. It was just the way it was. That's what you got. I don't know what else to say, but that's why you try and get a flight that you could hold so you know what your day's off. And I tried to do that because Jim, my husband, had just come back from Vietnam. He had been there for 14 months and he could get across country. He was stationed in Brunswick, Georgia. He could get across country on the weekends to get his flight time in. And I tried to get some weekends off so that I could have them with him. And so if I could bid that flight, which was, like I said, it was for an hour and a half, you had to serve drinks and coffee and drinks and meals. It was, you were hustling. Let's just put it that way. But it was okay. At least if I could get a couple of weekends off during the month, that would be fine with me. And so that's what I did. But most of my trips were you were on standby, and usually they were somebody was sick or didn't make it, or I actually don't remember why, but they would, you know, nonstop from San Francisco to New York to Washington, D.C., to Boston, Chicago. Those were the ones that were, I had most of mine were to New York. I don't know why, but that's the ones that I got for when I was on standby. I could never hold that flight because that was a good one to hold because you only had, for the senior flight attendants, you could hold that flight and you could only have to do it a couple of times a month. You know, you could only fly 70 hours a month. And that was from pushback to the chocks were in the tires. So usually you could get your 72 hours in, you know, 8 days, 8 or 9 days, and then you'd have the rest of the time off. So, so that was pretty good. But anyway, those are the ones that I normally got. And so I had a lot of trips to New York, and we would stay at the Commodore Hotel, which was above the Grand Central Station. And that's where we would stay. So I did some things there that I probably would not have done, certainly on my own, except I was on my own there. I went to, it was Christmas time, and it wasn't Christmas, but I did spend Christmas in New York 1 year. But this was before that, though. It was all the, everything was, you know, Macy's was all lit up, and it was just a beautiful time. It was a little bit of snow ink going. And I got up one morning. Our flight got in that night. I can't remember, probably about 6 o'clock, I believe, in New York time. And then the next morning, we didn't have to leave until five the next afternoon. So I had the whole next day. I got up and I walked to St. Patrick's Cathedral and went to Mass. And I probably never would have done that, except that I'm in New York. I need to do something. It's Christmas time. And Beth, do something. So I did. And it was a very special time. I mean, of course, that cathedral is gorgeous. And they were having Mass, and I went. And it was a good experience for me, you know, as a 20-something, you know. Anyway, and some of the other places I went, Boston was fun. You always had a good time in Boston. You were usually there never long enough to do a lot. It's usually just overnight. Sometimes my greatest flight was to Hartford, Connecticut. And that was after Jim had come home from Vietnam. And as I said, he was stationed in Georgia. And I had a 36-hour layover in Hartford, Connecticut. And it landed on a Friday. And of course, it left on Sunday morning. Jim was able to get an airplane for his flight time. And he flew up to Hartford, and we met, and we were able to spend the weekend together. So this was really, that was a good trip. That was very memorable. And, you know, like I said, we will be married 56 years next week. So I guess it worked. I guess it's going to work. What do you think?
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, and for those listening who both follow the museum speaker series and the Green Dot podcast here, you'll notice she's talking about Jim. That's Jim Markle, the F-8 pilot that we had on just recently. So, and he was a speaker here in the museum. So that's how I learned of Bev's airline service. And while they were here, I'm like, oh my gosh, we have to get you on our podcast.
Yeah, so,
and here we are.
that's another
I'm not
first,
sure.
I think.
I'm not sure how exciting it is, but I guess, you know, it was the era. It was a different time. I mean, things were different. You know, we had a war going on, and even though war wasn't supposed to be, I mean, they said it was not a war, but it was. I'm just happy my husband came home. My husband now, of course, because I could have been married, but he was in Vietnam. Anyway, but I couldn't have had children. So anyway, yeah, it was a different era. I mean, things were different. I mean, nowadays, you know, like I said, people dress differently on the airplane. They're more crowded. The airplanes are full. I think the flight attendants do a great job doing what they do with all the people that they have. I guess my only concern is that it's hard for a passenger, as me, I'm going to say me as a passenger, the people that come on with their carry-ons, they're all very large carry-ons and they're huge, big backpacks. Well, if you're seated, this backpack is going to hit you in the head. I can't, you know, there's a lot of them like that, and you get hit in the head a lot. But other than that, and there's a lot of stuff in the overhead bins. I mean, I don't know. Anyway, but that was not back in the 60s. That was not it. Just a few little things. And, you know, people dressed differently back then. It was a big deal to fly, you know. And I can remember our son not too long ago, we were getting ready to go on an airplane, and we were in the terminal, and this guy who was getting on our flight was dressed in pajama bottoms and flip-flops and a shirt. I don't know. And my son looked at me and said, you know, do you think he got up this morning and looked in the mirror and said, yep, this is the look I'm going for? I don't think so. I mean, well, maybe that was the look, because that's the way he got on the airplane. But anyway, but passengers are always very, you know, cooperative and courteous. And, you know, everybody's trying to go to the same place and get on the airplane. And, you know, it's just different nowadays. It just is very different.
It sure is.
Yeah. It was, like I said, it was very glamorous. It was a fun time to be a flight attendant in the 60s. So and, anyway.
You know, for me. Oh, yeah. Excuse me, Bev.
That's okay.
For me, you know, growing up, you know, what I remember so much in being part of a United family and traveling space available and things like that. And we had an employee dress code that sort of stayed stricter than the average dress code for a while. So, you know, I was in my 20s the first time I got on an airliner without wearing a necktie.
Oh.
And I felt completely underdressed, you know, even though by that time the shorts and tank tops and flip-flops and stuff were getting pretty prevalent already.
Yeah.
But it really was a different time, was a different approach, and you know, it had its ups and downs, but we certainly romanticize it now, but there's something about that you're still nostalgic about. Is it was an event, it really meant something, and you said everybody's going to the same place, and there was more of a sense of I imagine there was more of a sense of sort of shared adventure among the passengers. Like, we're all sort of doing this together, and we're going to dress up, and we're going to treat each other respectfully. And
right. Well, they still do that today. I mean, everybody's very respectful of one another. They just have a lot of luggage and a lot of stuff that they come on board with. You know? I mean, so, you know, that's the way it is. I mean, things have changed, you know, and after 56 years, I guess, things change.
Bev, I have a question for you. Is there a flight, and you kind of answered it with the Hartford flight, but is there a passenger or that maybe stands out over all your flights that you just connected with, or someone you thought was interesting that you met? Was there anything like that on your flights?
I had, yes. There was one person on my flight, and he was flying first class, and I can't remember if it was to New York or to Washington. But it was Mr. Packard of Hewlett Packard. He would always sit in the second row, seat F, which was the window seat in first class. He was very quiet. He was always busy. He had lots of papers. He didn't eat a lot. I remember that. And he never drank. He never had a cocktail or a liqueur. He did eat lunch. But anyway, he was so pleasant and so kind. He was just such a nice man, and I had him several times. He was on my flight several times, and he was interesting to talk to, because this was, like I said, in the 60s, but it was, at the time, I did know Hewlett Packard, but it was just it wasn't even computers. It was, I'm not even sure what it was at the time. I guess it was like, well, it wasn't typewriters. It might have been computers. What was Hewlett Packard? I don't know. Anyway, I don't remember, but he was just so pleasant to talk to, and he talked about his family, and he didn't talk about his work, however, but he was just a pleasant man to talk to. You know, that's the one that stands out in my mind. And we had a lot of singers that would travel to New York, and I'm saying singers. Lou Rawls was one of them. Wow. He was back then. I remember he was, and they all flew first class, of course. Well, I say of course, not necessarily, but they were flying first class. But as a flight attendant, if you flew standby, if you had to, if you had a seat, if you got your seat, if you were going someplace and you were able to go standby, you still, and if you were using your privileges, you did have to dress. I mean, you did have to dress. And even, I remember, I have a nephew who is a United pilot today, and he and his wife were, I can't remember where they were going, but she had on sandals, and they did not like that. So this was United. And so she luckily had a change of shoes, so she had on shoes that were not sandals. They had a toe and a heel in them. So, I mean, they still have restrictions, I think, I guess. I don't know today, but this was probably back, this was a long time, probably 20 years ago. Well, I don't know if he's been flying that long, but yeah, he has been. So things, you know, as you were saying, you had a necktie, you had your tie, and you felt undressed without it on. And I think there probably still are some restrictions, but I don't know what they would be now on any of the airlines. Of course, TWA is not in service anymore, but right. I'm sure they're all follow the same rules pretty much, where on any airline, if you were going standby as a employee, you have to dress appropriately. I'm sure that still goes. I would hope sure. So. You know.
So Bev, I got a question for you. Have you been to the TWA hotel out of Kennedy, the refurbed offices? It's now a hotel honoring the 60s.
No, I haven't, and I would love to do that. I think my husband told me about it, and then I think you did, Chris, when we were back there a month or so ago. I haven't. But I understand that it's wonderful, that it's beautiful, and it will bring back a lot of memories. I'm sure, you know, I've forgotten a lot of stuff. And I mean, you're asking me some questions that I really, I don't know if I mean, I remember some of them, like I remembered the announcement. I'd go figure that one. But I haven't been there, but I would love to. And I'm sure it would bring back a lot of memories. I know when our daughter lives in Northern California, and she went to the Silverado Country Club, and right in the first part as you enter the Silverado, there's a huge big TWA sign that says Fly TWA. So she sent me a picture of it, and that was kind of cool. So, you know, I guess it is all, it's all vintage stuff, just like me. We're vintage, you know. there aren't too many of us left, I guess. I would hope there would be some of us, you know, but, you know, we were all young. We were all, you know, like today, you don't see too many 20-year-old flight attendants, because now you can make a career out of it. You know, you can be married, you can have children, you know, but, anyway, like I said, I think I'm probably vintage, piece of vintage.
Bev, thinking back to those days, and you mentioned three airplanes in particular, 707 and the 727, and then the lesser known but incredibly cool Convair 880.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite among those?
Yes, my very favorite was the Convair 880. It was a great airplane. It was smaller. I can't remember how many passengers, but it was workable. I mean, it was a nice airplane to fly. The galley was great, and I don't ask me why. I just remember, and I can't remember where we would go to in those airplanes. I guess they were the shorter flights, I guess, and I don't remember. But yes, that was my favorite, and it was the galley. The coffee pot was kind of in the middle of the airplane, or not in the middle, but it was right as you entered the front door, you'd take a right and you'd go to first class, but the coffee pot was right there. So it was, you always had coffee in it, and first class passengers would actually get up themselves if the flight attendant forgot to offer them. Heaven forbid we forgot to offer more coffee, but they would actually get up and fill their cup, you know, bring their little their little China cup up and fill it up. So we didn't really like that because that was really, we were neglecting our job, but that didn't happen too often. But the coffee pot was there and it was a nice size galley to work in. And I don't ask me why I liked that airplane so much. I don't know. I just did. It was good. And maybe the load, the passenger load was lesser. And so it was an easier, and I don't mean I say easier, it was a easy service. I mean, you could do it nicely and enjoy your passengers, you know, because that's half the fun, you know, is talking to your passengers and, you know, where are they going and what are they doing there? And, you know, are they going to see their grandkids or are they going to go see their mother or they're going, you know, someplace like that. So that's how you got to know your passengers. That was the fun part. You know, you got to know people or meet people and, you know, all different walks of life and what they were doing. And so that was the airplane. And I think it was probably the configuration of, like, they all were configured a little bit differently. Each aircraft was, but, or each make. And I actually don't remember how many passengers. I think it was like 75 in the back. And I say in the back, that's what we called it. It's in coach. It was just first class and coach. We didn't have business class on any of those airplanes, the ones that I flew. Anyway, the 727, 707, or the Convair 880, there was just first class and coach. First class only had, 707 only had 16 or 20 people total. So if you went to New York, that was just a great trip. I mean, you could do a nice service and people were happy and you didn't have to be rushed and getting everything up off of their laps or anything else like that. But so it was a good service. And in the back was the same way. I mean, in the coach, I mean, it was even with 97 people or 120 in the back, you could still do a good service for, you know, from San Francisco to New York and still had leisurely time to chat a little bit, you know, but you were still busy, you know, and that's what you were supposed to do. That was our job, you know?
Well, one of the questions I have for you, Bev, did you really bond up as a crew? Like when you would go on these trips, did you guys kind of bond up and maybe like hang out together in the downtime or were there like certain crew members that, if you saw them on a flight, you kind of knew you liked working with them more?
Well, yes. There were certain crew members. Normally, you were kind of on your own. At least I was. I was so junior, these other flight attendants had flown. Well, they were a little bit older than I was. Not very much older, but and they had flown a lot more than I had. They had been on board for. On board with TWA for probably a couple of years. And I mean, when I was new, it was kind of tough. So they had a rapport with some of the other crew members. And you didn't do a lot with the crew when you were there. You were really, I'm going to take a, for instance, for New York, you were there at night and then you left the next day. Everybody had their own thing to do. Like I said, that one time I went to church, the rest of the time, you would just stay in your hotel room or whatever. I do remember one time I was with the crew, and I was quite young, and I didn't have a whole lot of cash on me. And the captain of the flight was Captain Tui, his name. I remember him. Remember the name. I guess it's spelled T-O-O-E-Y. I don't know, Captain Tui. And he suggested that we all go, instead of going to New York, we all go to Mama's in New York. I had never been there. I mean, I was from the South, and so I hadn't traveled the world. I hadn't been a lot of places. So he said, I didn't know where Mama's was. So anyway, he said, oh, no, we'll go there. He said, it's an Italian place. I said, okay, thinking, okay, great. I think I've got enough money, you know, for whatever we're going to have, pizza or spaghetti or something. Well, we all went. Well, of course, we ordered wine because we had a whole night. I mean, it was just one bottle between eight people. So I didn't have any. I wasn't drinking. Don't ask me why. I don't know. I wasn't drinking at the time. Anyway, the bill came, and I was short about $7. I didn't have the cash. And, of course, this was before credit cards. So the captain said, Bev, don't you worry about it. I'll pay for the whole thing. So he paid for my whole dinner, which was really very nice of him to do. I just had not expected it to be, you know, $25. I hadn't, for a meal back then, $25 was a lot of money. And it still is today. But anyway, I didn't have it. Anyway, he picked up the tab for me. So, which that was very nice. But normally we did not. A couple of times, yeah, there was a couple of flight attendants that I went. We went go to lunch together or go to breakfast the next day. And then you'd usually come back and rest because you would have a flight that would leave usually that afternoon, like 4 or 5 o'clock from New York to go back to San Francisco. So, you know, you had to walk from San Francisco to New York and had to walk back, you know, so you have to, you know, kind of rest your feet, rest up a bit. So there wasn't a lot, at least for me, it wasn't. I was able to fly with one of my roommates. I had three other roommates. I was able to fly with one of my roommates. So that was fun. And we had gone to Washington. We had flown to Washington together. So that was a fun trip. But normally, everybody kind of had their own thing. And of course, this was before you had cell phones or iPhones or laptops or, you know, anything. So you had a room phone and that was it. And you got a wake up call from crew scheduling from wherever you were, from Boston, from New York, from Chicago, at whatever time you got a wake up call to make sure you were up and down in the lobby and ready for the bus to load you onto to the aircraft, you know, to wherever airport you were in. So it was, you know, you kind of did your own thing, I guess. I did a lot of, especially in New York, I mean, we were over Grand Central Station. There was a deli down there. I would go down and get my, usually a sandwich for dinner that night and bring it up. I don't even know if, I guess we had TVs in our rooms at the time. I don't remember. Did we have TVs back then? Yeah, in the 60s we did. Sure, we did. Anyway, I guess that's what I would do. And I would sleep in the next morning. And, I don't know what else to tell you. That wasn't terribly exciting, but it was sometimes was exciting. Sometimes it wasn't, you know, it would just depend.
Well, Bev, that's fantastic. It's really been, it's hard to describe what it feels like to sort of reminisce and kind of, you know, see an era that was just before our time, by a bit. But it's an era that is steeped in nostalgia for anybody with an interest in aviation history, particularly on the commercial side. And it's really been wonderful to sort of relive some of that and see that through your eyes as someone who was there. And we can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us.
Well, thank you so much. You know, and I told you I was from the South. I'm from Pensacola, and I grew up with two brothers and a younger sister. So that's a Navy town. You know, it's a aviation town. So I grew up with it. You know, I grew up in the 50s with it. And when my husband was actually in training there when I left in 1962. So, that's how I guess maybe some of it rubbed off on me. I don't really know. It's just that I happened to see that TWA office at one time, and that's how I ended up in TWA. So, you know, I grew up in the 50s, and that was the poodle skirts, the bobby socks, that were pep rallies, the football games, Friday night football games. You cruise down Palafox Street, which is still there in Pensacola. And that was, you know, then you'd go to the, after that, you'd go to the drive-in. A drive-in, you get fries and a Coke with your car hops, you know, right there, and then you'd be home by 11:30. So that was, you know, I grew up in the 50s, and it was a wonderful time to grow up, and it was a good time a few years later to be a flight attendant. It was, like I said, very glamorous. It was very fun. It was something that I needed to do at the time to wait for my husband, my love of my life, to come home, and I'm glad he came home. So that was
here, here.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I am, and I'm still here, and we're still here.
thank goodness for all of that.
Yeah.
Well, Bev, my goodness, thank you once again for taking the time to join us. We're up against the clock, but this has been great to ride along as you said, walk with you from San Francisco to New York a couple of times.
Yeah.
What a great image that is. So our thanks to you again, Bev, for taking the time to join us today. And of course, thanks as always to everyone out there listening, the people that take the time to leave us reviews on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, people that leave us these great comments at inspiredidea.org, the website where each episode has its landing page. So we're always grateful for that, and we appreciate the compliments. We appreciate the constructive ideas. That all means so much, and it's that feedback that lets us continue. If you do have specific feedback and don't want to post it publicly in any of those areas, you can email us at feedback@eaa.org and mention the podcast, and that'll find its way to the team of us that work on the project. So with that, thanks again to everyone out there for listening. Thank you once again, Bev, for your time today, for taking us back in time to a glamorous period in commercial aviation history. And with that, as we are recording this, we are winding down the final preparations for AirVenture, and then it's just going to be 10 days of absolute crazy joy.
Yes.
So we're excited about that. And to the audience, we look forward to catching up to you next time when you're cleared to land on the green dot.